Hi everyone, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. It's good to have you here with us. I'm back from Ireland, and that's going to be the focus of most of this episode. We'll talk a little bit about the Horizon Irish Open, because I was there for at least one day, and we'll talk a little bit about the Ryder Cup, just a touch, because it's a little dated, but just kind of an overview of where I think things are with the Ryder Cup. And then we'll pretty much just get into a recap of the Irish trip. It was amazing. That's the easy headline. But I do want to talk about just kind of some details and maybe some things that I was surprised by and the things to think about if you're going to take a trip to Ireland or really any international destination to play golf, but especially Ireland. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, I want to talk about the situation with the Ryder Cup. We've got teams for both sides. We've got 24 players. Europeans rounded everything out. Really, the first couple of days that I was over in Ireland when Ludvig Åberg won the Omega European Masters for his first DP World Tour win, sixth career start on that tour as a professional. Well, I think it was sixth start period, not professional. And that pretty much cemented his place. Now, the interesting guy that got left off in all of this was Adrian Meronk, who was a top 50 player up until recently and found himself being the odd man out. And I think some of that is cultural, right? In that the Højgaards kind of have a little bit better standing with Thomas Bjorn, right? Who has a big hand in the Ryder Cup. So Åberg made himself unavoidable. I mean, he had to make the team. And then who's the guy that you leave off? Adrian Meronk. Well, he's a little bit slower of a player. Maybe a little too meticulous for this format. Maybe it's easy to get under his skin in a match play situation. Whatever reason, whether it was political, whether it was statistical, whether it was both, they decided he was the odd man out. So now we've got our 12 players on each team. Gonna be heading over there next week. Yeah, geez. Middle of next week, we're going to head over. My wife and I are going to head over to Spain to go see the Solheim Cup, which I'm so excited about. Then we're going to do Oktoberfest for a couple days, a little reset, and then we'll get ready for the Ryder Cup down in Rome. The U.S. team is over there right now, trying to get friendly with the venue, trying to learn what they might not know or might have not seen about this golf course that might be interesting to them. I don't personally find Marco Simone that kind of course that requires a whole lot of learning. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just not a peculiar golf course. You kind of have to learn some things probably about the greens and maybe where you want to tee off and maybe working together a little bit is the key component. Trying to figure out how you want to play an alternate shot or maybe an approach that works for two different players in the four ball format, whatever it is. And that's fine. But I think really more of it is about gelling. It's trying to gel in this team concept and how it might work together. And this is not something I've thought of extensively. I'm just kind of thinking about it right now because I'm prone to obviously picking fun at LIV Golf at every possible opportunity. But I am genuinely curious if Brooks Koepka brings anything better to the table now that he's been, quote-unquote, the captain of his four-person golf team through LIV Golf. I have no idea. I don't know if it's any good or not. I don't know. I mean, he is said to care. He's said to kind of put together these workouts that are kind of crazy and maybe almost like punishment workouts when you play poorly. But how does that all kind of fit into a situation where everybody's got a huge ego? Everybody, I mean, there are obviously more players. There's 12, not four. There's a captain that isn't playing, so the person ostensibly in charge is not even part of the competition. I'm genuinely curious about that. Again, there's no depth there. It's not a joke. Just something thrown out there, just kind of curious about it. And it might mean nothing at all. And I think both teams have very clear liabilities. They're very strong at the top. They also have teams filled with players that don't have a ton of experience. That could be a positive, that could be a negative. You can't necessarily say inexperience in this particular competition is bad or good. we've had plenty of Americans with tons of experience in the Ryder Cup, and it's a lot of bad experience. And 2021 showed us that that talent kind of carried this group, that some had experience, some didn't, but the inexperienced ones probably were better off not knowing all the scar tissue of the generation that came before them. And Dustin Johnson, so inspired, played 5-0-0 golf and was unbeatable. So I don't think inexperience is necessarily a bad thing. Stacey Lewis has said that about having, what, 5 rookies on her Solheim Cup team. But they're players who won majors this year. 3 majors between them, between Allison Corpuz and Lilia Vu. So you can't tell me that they're not suitable for the experience because they've done it on the biggest stages that they have individually. To me, we overthink so much about the Ryder Cup because, and the Solheim Cup for that matter, because we think about chess pieces always moving the same, always working out the same way. Whereas you could make the same moves in alternate universes, really, and things could work out 10 different ways. And we have this one game scenario where you go, "Oh, if you make all the right decisions, you're a genius." Well, you could still make all the right decisions and fail. So just appreciate it for what it is. I think it's an intriguing matchup. I think from if you're into betting, from a betting perspective, Europe was the play. They are now the favorite. Now the U.S. is probably the play. Hopefully you got a little bit of each side, because just a few weeks ago, the Europeans were like plus 150, plus 160, plus 180. And that was bought all the way down to make them a favorite. Well, now you can go the other way. You can go get some plus money in the United States. Maybe you hedge your bet a little bit. Come out ahead either way. It's up to you. But I'm very much looking forward to that. And I think we have an intriguing week ahead in terms of preparation, because we've got 2 very different events. We got a PGA Tour event starts the FedEx Cup fall. We'll explain that in a sec. And in the Fortinet Championship, you got Max Homa and Justin Thomas who are playing in that. Zach Johnson's there to play too, which I think is kind of interesting. All these guys who went over for the team building and the strategy session, they're going to fly back on a private jet over to California and go play jet lagged in a tournament. That doesn't sound like the smartest idea I've ever heard, but that's what they're doing. And then you've got in England at Wentworth, you've got the BMW PGA Championship, which is their flagship tournament, signature tournament, whatever you want to call it. You've got 15 of the world top 50 competing. Really, really good field. You've got the 3 biggest European players competing with McIlroy, Rahm, and Hovland. And they're going to get themselves fresh in time to go play in the Ryder Cup on a venue that could be set up, could be construed. I mean, the trees are a difference, but could be set up to play a little bit tighter, more like you would see in the Ryder Cup, or could be set up antithetical. I don't know what Luke Donald's coming up with, but I think the theory of the case is they're going to do the same thing as 2018 at Lake Golf National, tighten everything up, frustrate the Americans, and dare them to hit the fairway. And if they don't, then they fall apart and everything goes bad and the U.S. gets whooped. So we'll see what happens. But the FedEx Cup fall is this week. It starts this week. We've got 7 tournaments. PGA Tour finally explained last week what the heck's happening with this thing. And the fall concept is about what we figured it would be. So for the players who didn't get into the second leg of the playoffs, you will start the FedEx Cup fall with all the FedEx Cup points you earned through the first playoff event in Memphis. So if you were ranked 51st through 70th in FedEx Cup points after the Memphis event, then you get all those points you earned from the regular season and the points that you earned in Memphis. That's your head start. Everybody else gets the points they had from the regular season. And you're going to play 7 events, 500 FedEx Cup points to the winner. If you finish in the top 125 in points from that total list at the end, then you get your PGA Tour status for next year. So effectively, you're playing for 75 spots. Top 75 players on this list get points and or get PGA Tour cards based on their points. And the top 10 finishers who aren't already eligible will get into the first 2 mainland United States signature events. So X the Century. The Century is its own thing with its own qualifying criteria. But the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am and the Genesis Invitational will welcome the top 10 players from the fall, in addition to the players who got in the top 50 and any top 30 player in the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll get all that sorted out, but that's what they're playing for here. And I am very curious how this is going to look and how people are going to be interested in it, because they've built it as, oh, well, now that, you know, the fall means something again, and it means something to next year, not something to start the year. And that could all be true. But after this week, where you have two of the Ryder Cup players competing, and one is competing because he's a two-time defending champion, the other is competing because it seemingly was compulsory after being named to the team, I think the fields are going to get pretty thin pretty fast. And it's just going to be an intriguing kind of 28-round sprint if you can make the cut in all of them and try to earn your way into not only a PGA Tour card, but also into this kind of top 10 list. So we'll see how that all works out. I think it's better this way than the way it was, where everyone started at zero. But I really don't know how it'll all wind up. So that all to say, we got some good golf this week. Plenty to watch, plenty to be interested in. And get ready for the Ryder Cup and the Solheim Cup in the next couple weeks. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back, and we'll start talking a little bit about Ireland. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's really been an amazing last couple of weeks. So we left for Ireland. I left last Wednesday night, so it'll be 2 weeks ago in 2 days, and took the journey over from Washington Dulles on Aer Lingus all the way over to Dublin, and it was like a 6.5 hour flight. We had a great tailwind. I don't know how much of that was related to the hurricane that hit Florida. I think you just always have a good tailwind, and you can have a better one because of jet stream. I don't think the hurricane really had anything to do with it, but we got there a little bit earlier than expected, like 30, 45 minutes earlier than expected. And Aer Lingus was fine. No issues there. I mean, what I would strongly recommend to you, if you can do it, is to buy the exit row. If you're going to fly, and it could be any airline, it doesn't matter what you're doing for a trip like this, but for a long international journey, and I understand that this isn't that much different than flying to Vegas cross country or Los Angeles cross country from the East Coast. You know, it's 5.5 hours instead of 6.5 hours. But if you can, buy or acquire the emergency exit row, because I got it coming back, which is a longer journey because you're into the wind, right? You have a headwind. And the difference in leg room is stark, for one, but it's even more stark over a long journey. And it made it so much more comfortable, so much easier to be able to get back to the U.S. just in comfort. It didn't hurt that I watched Succession for like 5 hours in a row. I'd never seen the show, which maybe that's an indictment of me, but the final season was on the, you know, in plane entertainment system, and just watched that for 5 hours in a row, and now I'm going to watch the rest of Succession. But that made it a whole lot easier. International flights are pretty decent. They're not hard to do. The trick, in my estimation, is to figure out how to entertain yourself and just kind of keep your wits about you. You're going to get a meal, which on Aer Lingus both were actually pretty good. Got like a full meal. Had a couple choices to work with. One time I had a beef. One time I had a Korean-style chicken. Both were good. They came with a dessert. Came with a water. Came with a little salad. So, I mean, it was a nice little meal. You got one of them. Got some snacks. Got some water and another drink. Really, that tied me over for that journey. That was not bad at all. So if you're worried about the trip, it's not that bad. Of course, you're coming from like the West Coast or the Central Time Zone, that part of the country, and you're trying to come over here and do back-to-back flights, that's a long freaking day. That's a long day. So keep that in mind. But most people probably don't want to make a multi-day journey of it. You want to try and get it all done as quickly as you can, and I understand that. But the main thing that I think you need to be aware of is that when you hit the ground, whenever you hit the ground. Now, for me, we hit the ground, 8:30 in the morning, Irish time. So that's GMT, that's -5. So it was 3:30 in the morning, U.S. East Coast time, where I'm from. And that, my mission was very evident, was stay up as long as you can to try to even out the jet lag. Try to get on to GMT as best you can. Make it feel like a normal day. And that, our goal was to stay up till 9 o'clock at night. We went up staying up till like 11:30. So we accomplished that mission. But when we landed in at the airport in Dublin, went up, you know, we had a car for the week. Tiernan Byrne with Club Choice Ireland, who is a phenomenal man, just a great human being, great guy that we got to play golf with most of the trip, and do most of the things that we did with him, which I'm so glad that we were able to do that. But he went, you know, he had already had the car, but getting the rental car is not hard to do. Get out of the facility and then you start getting going. I will point out that having something like Apple CarPlay or Android Auto in your car will make your life so much easier, because you don't have to worry about what you're going to listen to in multi-hour drives. You're not going to have to worry about directions as much. Although I will say, at least for my part, Google Maps directions in Ireland are not nearly as good as they are here in the United States. They're just not quite as exact for someone who probably needs them. There will take some getting used to of kilometers. Just divide by 1.6. You'll get it. You'll eventually kind of figure it out. It's not that hard to do. But fortunately, we were able to kind of get going really quickly. Went up to our first town for the first 3 nights, which is called Malahide, a little north of Dublin. So most of our trip was not in Dublin. We had a day in Dublin. And that was in part because Brendan Sweeney and I have both been. He's been to Ireland multiple times. I went once before. We were central in Dublin for much of it, and then just kind of spidered out by train to do the other things that my wife and I did. And we didn't feel the need to just be in Dublin. We just kind of wanted to do the rest of whatever this journey was going to be. So we went up to Malahide, had lunch at Malahide Castle. Really great place, nice little cafe in there. And then we went into central Malahide. We stayed at the Grand Hotel Malahide, a lovely, lovely hotel. Old school place, a little bit of a labyrinth to get through to the rooms, but we figured that out by day two. First night, not a good choice. Once we put our stuff down because we got there before check-in time, and then we went into town. We're like, all right, well, we're going to go see some, there's a pub called Gibney's that's really famous, and then we stumbled over to a place called Duffy's and started chatting with people, and Duffy's was great too. Shout out to Slim and everybody over there at Duffy's. But we tried to kind of drink our way to nighttime, and then made our way back, checked in, got our keys, and we're like, how do we get around this hotel? But we figured it out eventually. Didn't have to sleep in the hallway. And I mean, the hotel was great. We had great views of Malahide, where you can see across kind of the harbor. You can see the Island Golf Club, which we didn't play, but is one of the better courses in the area. The town is just really quaint. It's fun. There's enough of a downtown where you can go to four or five different bars and have a really good time. You can have a good dinner at the steakhouse. You can really enjoy yourself without having to kind of overextend yourself or feel like too much of a tourist. It's an easy place to kind of settle in. They had a nice little swimming racket club kind of thing, like gym, right next to the hotel. So we could go take a dip in the swimming pool, or we can go in the hot tub after a nice day of golf. One thing I did find out that I thought was kind of cool was a lot of the places that we went had resident lounges, like separate bars for locals or people staying in the hotel. And those were the really cool places to chill after a late night, because that's when people, you know, the people who kind of kept going, they got out of the pubs and just kind of went there and chilled. And so I had some great conversations there, just kind of nice nightcap places. So try to find those in your hotel, depending on where you're staying. If you're doing Airbnb kind of thing, obviously a different situation. But if you're doing hotel to hotel, then you got that opportunity. And something I will underscore about our trip, and we were in like 10 different towns over the course of basically 10 days. We were in Malahide and Bowtray, where we played our first round of golf. We were in Port Marnock for our second round of golf. We were in Wicklow for another round. We were in Dublin. We were in Wexford. We were in Hook. We were in Rosslare. we were in Clare, Sheridan. You know, there were a lot of towns that we were in. And they all have a different flavor and they all have a different feel. And they're all outside of, you know, Dublin. If it would be very easy to come into a trip like this and just kind of be in one place or two places and stay there and then kind of commute out each day. For my money's worth, I would not do that. I would strongly recommend that you plot out different hotels. If you want to go beyond kind of one general area, that you go into different towns, you go experience different things. And we'll run down the courses here in a second. We played six. But we probably put 400 or 500 miles on this car, this rental car, between Tiernan driving, God bless him, and Brendan driving, God bless him more, because as an American, holy crap. But the opportunity to see what Ireland looks like out of Dublin and to experience all kinds of different towns and all have different flavor, all have different things to add that make your experience special, that is absolutely worth it. Otherwise, you just kind of feel like you're going to, no offense to any great American golf resort, but go to Pinehurst, go to Sand Valley, go to Bandon, go to Stream Song, all those places where you kind of are, you're meant to be central. You're meant to be there and not experience a whole lot outside the resort. Pinehurst being maybe a notable exception, but the whole town's a resort. And those places are great, but you don't get a feel of what's around it. I think when you travel internationally, you want that. I wanted to talk to people. And frankly, they wanted to talk to us. I cannot tell you what a handful of times at least that someone came up to us and obviously heard our accent and just struck up a conversation. And none of it was ever accusatory. It wasn't negative in nature. They just wanted to talk. And we wanted to talk to them. And it led to some great nights, great conversations, great drinks. It is absolutely worth being open to talking to somebody. Don't just kind of be insular and talk to only the people that you came with. You're going to miss out on so much. And you're going to miss out if you don't just walk into that random bar sometimes. Don't always walk into the tourist trap bar, because there are going to be places at resorts where they go, well, you got to check out this bar. You know, Americans love that. Don't go to that bar. Go to a different one, because you will find what's a little bit more of reality. And you'll find people, some people just won't talk to you. I mean, that's every bar. But there are people pretty much every bar like, hey, you're an American. I'm like, yes, I am. And that started a conversation. And usually it was a good one. I mean, they were all good. So let's go over the golf that we played, because that's kind of why you're listening to this, instead of just tips and tricks. So we played six places in 6 days. So first day, settle in, just get back on normal time as best that you can. What I would recommend doing then is having a later first round, if you can do it. And you might not be able to, but if you can, try to get something around lunchtime. 12, 1, 11 even. Just so you can sleep in a little bit. Not like till 10 a.m., but just so when you get up, you're like, I'm rested. Get 8-9 hours of sleep, because you're still going to be a little tired. You're not going to be used to it. It's going to take you 3 or 4 days to really get used to it, but 2 or 3 should do the trick. And you're going to get up and go, okay, where the heck am I? What did I do last night? What am I supposed to do today? And so we went from Malahide to a town called Boutre, which is about an hour's drive, because there's no real easy highway. And that's one thing to worth pointing out here when you're plotting this out, whether you're a trip captain kind of guy or you're having someone do it for you, you're working with a tour operator like Club Choice Ireland, whether you're self-driving, whether you have a driver, be aware of the time it takes to get to and from places, because you got to build that in, knowing that there aren't highways everywhere. And even if they are, it's not the American version of a highway where you're driving 85 miles per hour if you want. They're 2-lane, maybe 3-lane wide highways, and there are some near Dublin that are bigger. But generally speaking, once you're outside the Dublin area, you're looking at, you know, 65 miles per hour is kind of the fastest you're going to drive for much of it. And then you get into the off-ramps, lots of roundabouts, slower roads, thinner roads, you're going to go slower. So build in that time. There are some places like County Louth where you have to go through Drogheda is the town that we went through to Drogheda to get through to Boutre. You can't avoid it. You have to go through it. Well, that builds in time, right? So being aware of that is really important. We got there, took a little bit more than an hour, got to County Louth, and I think it's one of the more underrated, underappreciated golf courses probably in the country. But if you're in this region, you know how good it is. It's a links style course. We played four links courses. This kicks it off. You're right on the Irish Sea. You can hear the waves crashing, the dunes that kind of guard the Irish Sea and the mainland, you know, the land. They're tall, so you don't get a lot of glimpses of the ocean, you know, from tee boxes and things like that. Place opened in 1893, so they really haven't done so many changes where you go, well, they built up this tee box so you can go see the ocean kind of thing. And they didn't really do that. And when we got there, you know, I packed for a weather forecast that was 65 degrees during the day, 55 degrees at night, 40% chance of rain every day. Had waterproofs, had pants for everything, had all that type of stuff covered in the event that it was going to rain, be crummy. It's raining on the first hole. Like, this is what I signed up for. It's going to be, if it's going to be like this all week, this is what it's going to be like. After the second hole, it stopped raining. After the third hole, it stopped being cloudy. It wasn't cloudy again the rest of the time. And frankly, it was 75 degrees every day. One day, it was 80. So, big tip and trick. Be ready for ridiculous swings in weather that you don't expect, that are not forecast. So, if you're thinking pants weather every day, I implore you, just bring two pairs of shorts. I brought one, and they were gym shorts, and I wore them 5 days in a row because otherwise I was going to melt like a popsicle. And I'm sure my friends got sick and tired of seeing me in these blue shorts, but they were the only thing keeping me upright. So bring a couple pairs of golf shorts. Please do it. It will save you money, and it'll save you a lot of heartache. That all said, County Louth is incredible. Just a traditional, very old links. Very playable. Certainly quirks, some blind shots, lots of shots which were defined by you were hitting over something, kind of a saddle that hid the green a little bit, some more dramatic than others, great bunkering that was meant to catch aggressive play, but not so penal that you couldn't get out of it, really good green complexes, good speeds on the greens, nothing too quick, but quick enough. Architecture was brilliant, and it all kind of leads to a spot on the 14th hole, which is kind of the one place they build it up. And you get to the tee, back tee on the 14th hole, and you can see the Irish Sea. You see the 13th green, you see the 14th hole, and you just kind of look around and go, wow, that this is why I'm here. This is what drew me to Ireland. And then, incidentally, next door, there's a place called Sea Point that hosted the Senior Tour, the Legends Tour, for the European folks not too long ago. And that has some more water views, but the golf isn't quite as good 1 through 18. So if you want to make a 36-hole day of it, you could. That's up to you. Just a little tip there. But the properties meet at that spot, at the 14th tee on Louth. I think it's the 15th tee, maybe, at Sea Point, which is kind of cool. Like, you kind of look over like, hey, what are you guys doing? There's no fencing or anything, just dune. And it was really cool. Some really photogenic holes. A lot of strategy required. You could bang your way around for most of it, but there were plenty of holes where you couldn't. You had to take an iron off the tee, or you had to play for position. You had to be careful. The rough could get pretty deep, especially if you got way off the fairway. Whew, some of the stuff we hit out of, man. Do not get in that stuff if you can avoid it. Please avoid it. I've never swung so hard in my life. But Louth was wonderful. Had a great time. Ends on a par 5. And it really suited my eye. Just whooped it as hard as I could. Got home in 2. Made the birdie to wrap up everything. We had our first Irish lunch. in the clubhouse. So we had breakfast before, had lunch after. Very welcoming. I mean, none of these places are really stuffy. The only place that could have been construed as kind of stuffy was perhaps the K Club, which is home of the Irish Open, and that's kind of meant to be a posh kind of club. So every place else we played was not really like that, even the resorts. And exceptional service, good food, pick whatever you want off the menu. If you are an American and you see something like I did, which was Cajun panini, and you're like, hey, I kind of like spicy food, do not expect anything spicy. They don't do spices. It might be in spirit something like Cajun or hot sauce or whatever, but it's like the negative mild compared to American stuff. So just know that it's flavorful, it tastes good, but do not expect a Cajun masterpiece, as you might imagine. But it's good. Food was good, service was great. Tipping culture, something to point out, that doesn't really exist. These people who work in service industry actually get paid a solid hourly wage. You can tip. You're not expected to tip. And if you do, it's like a 10 to 15% kind of thing. Tip what you want, but you don't have to. And in some places, you're going to get looked at kind of weird. Just an FYI about that. But if you're working with caddies, for example, okay, then in that case, yeah, tip properly, like you would here in the States. But food service type stuff, all those types of things, they will put the gratuity line on there. They're not really expecting anything, but you do what you want. So from there, we then kind of took our hour back and went back to Malahide and went back out again, had a great night. Next day, we went to Port Marnock Lynx. So there's Port Marnock Lynx Resort, and we went there, which is right next to Port Marnock Golf Club, which is the place that opened in the 1870s and apparently is getting some kind of look from the RNA to host an Open Championship in the future, which would be the first outside of the UK, by the way. So there is some rumor about that, at least. But Port Marnock Golf Club is different than Port Marnock Lynx. Port Marnock Lynx is a 1990s course that was built on an estate owned by the Jameson family, John Jameson's family, the people with the whiskey. And beautiful, beautiful place. It's a Bernhard Langer design. And playing it second kind of screwed it over. It's a beautiful, it was one of the few courses we walked because we traveled so much during the days. Tiernan, I think, very rightfully said, you probably don't want to walk too many times because you're just going to be gassed. If all you're doing is playing golf, walk. Just walk. You'll love it more. But if you're going all over the place, doing lots of tours, staying out late at night, get some rounds in where you got a buggy, where you got a cart. Please do it. It'll save you a lot of energy and you will have a lot more fun. So Brendan and I show up. They have very nice motorized caddies, that carts that you can rent. You can do a push cart, whatever you want. But the course, Port Marnock Lynx, had, I think, 6 or 7 new holes. They were all new to us, so it didn't really matter. But it was really interesting because you went from architecture that was in place at the turn of the 20th century to something that's 35 years old, basically. And the opening kind of, I'll say 6 holes, were good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them. They were mostly iron first off the tee, par 4s. They were relatively short. Bernhard Langer loves himself a pot bunker. I mean, there were just insane numbers of pot bunkers relative to Louth, which kind of had just some well-placed ones that probably stood out from the others and stood the test of time because of where people put them over the years. But Langer wasn't that way. And so you kind of play a whole bunch of holes that are sort of flat. You're in a flight pattern, so you notice a lot of planes coming into the Dublin airport. And then you get to the 7th hole, which was one of the redone holes. And now it starts to pick up. 7 was a good hole, played into a really cool kind of 270-degree dune area behind the green. There's a little burn 30 yards short that was, Brendan stayed up by quite literally 2 inches out of the water, It was a good hole. You get to 8. It's a great new little drivable par 4. There's a big dune that kind of shrouds your view. It clearly goes to the right. It's about 330. Carry the dune from the middle tee. From the back tee, it's like 380. But the dune kind of obscures how wide the landing area is. I didn't know. Banged it at the green. Went a few yards short. And two-putt it, putt off the green to gimme. Easy birdie. But a really cool hole, especially if you've never seen it. You don't really know what's on the other side. And then you kind of look back and you go, man, I had all kinds of room to work with. But for most people, they're going to lay up to a number. And then they may have a somewhat shrouded view of the green depending on their second shot and where the flag is. But then it really picks up. So you go up the hill a little bit. You go to this par 3. And it's the first time you see the Irish Sea, except from the first tee. And you play a little uphill par 3, again, from the box we played, middle box, one thing I will point out, a lot of the courses that we played were like the middle box. They were all like 65 to 6,800 yards. They found a way to even out a lot of the course without making it oppressive. You might have a couple 400-yard par 4s. This one had a couple over like 420, 440, but then balanced out with 350, 340 par 4s, par 3s. There were only a few that we played that were really long. In the entire trip, most were very short, very reasonable. And you can go play maybe a little bit longer of a golf course than you think because of the way it's laid out. But the ninth hole, it looks like the smallest green you've ever seen. And it turns out it's 50 yards wide, kind of Biarritz-style green. Really, really cool reveal. And then you kind of get on top of the hill. See the Irish Sea, you can see an island across the way, people just kind of hanging out on the beach, walking their dog in the morning, quiet waves crashing. You're like, all right, now it's picking up. And 10's a good hole, 11's a good par 3, 12's a really interesting redesigned par 5, used to be a par 4 apparently, but now placed like a very much uphill volcano style green where my second shot came up just a little short, got soundly rejected, and wound up in a bunker. And then you kind of play the last few holes up toward 15. Again, kind of another slow burn. You're like, okay, this is a pretty cool hole. And then you get to 15, another great par 3. Like, this course is defined by par 3s. Plays right alongside to the left of 9. You get that view of the ocean. 16, 17, 18. 16 and 18 in particular, you get views where you tee off of the ocean. They're shorter holes. 16 is kind of an iron only off the tee for most people, or a shorter drive. You can't hit driver very far. 18 is a really cool little hole, just kind of shrouded fairway. You got to hit a little cut or hit a tight draw. It's a good golf course. It was unfortunate in that it wasn't first. If it were first, Brendan and I would have been like, this is great. We really had a great time doing this. And instead, it felt kind of short compared to County Louth in terms of what County Louth delivered and just kind of pure links versus modern links. And that doesn't mean it's a bad golf course, but the order in which you play courses will absolutely determine how you feel about them. And it just kind of got lost in the shuffle the way that it was. But really, really good golf course. Very nice resort. We did not stay there, but we did have lunch there. Staff was brilliant. Food was good. And then we made our trip to Dublin, and we went to a place called Croke Park. And if you're familiar with Gaelic athletics, it's called the GAA, Gaelic Athletic Association. It started in the mid-1800s, to preserve Gaelic athletic tradition in the face of British rule. And Croke Park is the most important site in Gaelic athletics, where all Ireland, like national-level competitions are held, for hurling and for Gaelic football. Gaelic football, if you've never seen it, is, if you've seen Aussie rules football, it's like Aussie rules football, but instead of three sets of posts, there's one, and it's a round ball that looks like a volleyball. So we took a tour of Croke Park. Tiernan's family has a huge connection to Gaelic athletics, huge Wexford supporter, that's where he's from, and it was really cool. I mean, again, one of those things I would highly recommend of go experience what makes Irish people care about being Irish, if that makes sense. Don't go see the stuff that we want to go see. Go see the stuff that they would go take a day to go see with their family because they care. That was really cool. Beautiful stadium, 82,000 people that would fit in there. We got a tour with just, 20, 30 people. Got to see some really cool things. Highly, highly recommend. Went to go to the Gravity Bar. We did do a tourist trap. We went to St. James Gate. Saw the Gravity Bar at Guinness. The Gravity Bar is like 7 stories in the air. It's just kind of a relatively small glass-enclosed bar where you can get a free Guinness or two depending on how many tickets you get. And it'll give you a 360-degree view of the city, pointing out different points of interest, like Croke Park, Aviva Stadium, where they play soccer and rugby, the St. Patrick's campus, all kinds of different stuff. And it's a good way to kind of get your bearings in the city. My wife and I did that actually pretty early on in our experience when we went in 2012. I would recommend doing it. You can do the tour, whatever. That's up to you. Get a Guinness. It's self-directed. See what you want. But I would go check out the Gravity Bar. It's worth it. It is a tourist trap, 100%. But if you go on a quiet day, go on a like, middle weekday, there aren't many people in there. You just kind of enjoy the music. Maybe you pick the bartender's brains a little bit if you have some questions. But it's a good experience. It's worth doing. It's one of the few tourist traps where you're like, yeah, I should probably do that. Like Temple Bar, stuff like that. Nah, don't worry about that if you're in Dublin. Go find someplace where the locals are. But don't just fall into the tourist traps. This is the one notable exception. Well, I'm back in Malahide last night there. And then we checked out and went to a town, went basically around Dublin. And we were in a place called Wicklow. And this was the real mind blower of the trip. And I'm realizing how much time we've spent on this. So we'll probably get only about through this piece of it. And then we'll do this the back half of it on next week's show. But when I try to take trips like this, especially ones where you go to 3 or 4 different golf courses, and they're media trips or friend trips or whatever it is, doesn't matter what it is, I don't do a lot of research on the places I'm playing. Kind of get an idea of where they are, maybe look at a couple of pictures, and that's it. I want to dive in not knowing. I want to experience a place for the first time and just let it envelop me, and then I form an opinion. European Club is a place you have to play. You just have to. It was such an incredible, out-of-this-world, different experience. I love County Louth. I really enjoy Port Marnock Links. Rosslare, which we'll talk about in the next episode. Oh my gosh, what a revelation. European, and those are the 4 links we played. The European Club, it's like Whistling Straits. It's so just over the top, and it hits you again and again and again with just unrivaled beauty, wonderful architecture, really thoughtful stuff. Here's the kick about all of it. The guy who designed it is a guy who's a former, up until a few years ago, still wrote about golf, but former golf writer named Pat Ruddy. And Pat Ruddy has a fairly extensive, relatively speaking to his career arc, architectural background. He's still with us, and he has a home at the European Club. He's got a home on the property, but he has an apartment that's part of the clubhouse, like second floor of the clubhouse. This clubhouse is very small. There's not a whole lot of decoration to it. It's not a ton of food. He wants it to be about the golf. And that's fine. And he took us on a tour of his apartment. And by the way, we're not special in that regard. Pat Ruddy will talk to you if he's there. You could be anybody. He's happy to talk to you. Very lovely man. And we were going to go spend, 10 minutes with him. Like, hey, can we just have 10 minutes to talk to you before we go out and play your course? We just kind of want to pick your brain a little bit. Well, 58 minutes later, we were done. And we had such an interesting conversation about his career. We'll put that together. But basically the gist is, this was his like second or third crack at owning his own golf course. He grew up in the west of Ireland, bought a property, developed it, started the golf course. It got flooded out. He learned a lesson there about drainage and water movement. And then he decides, all right, I want to do my masterpiece. I'm going to go find a piece of land. I'm going to buy it, make the best links I can. And he hired someone to take a helicopter around the country, you know, around the island of Ireland, and find this Lynx land. And basically, if he'd just gone a little south, he'd have found what he ultimately built this European club on. But instead, he went north and went all the way around in a counterclockwise fashion and eventually found this land. He buys it, acquires it, starts building the course with just a bulldozer, front loader kind of deal, doing it himself. Takes about 5 years to do it. And the end product is this incredible golf course that reveals itself to you almost immediately. The first hole is a kind of par four, little uphill. And you're like, well, what am I getting myself into? If you haven't done the Outlook, you know, the Google Maps version. And then you get to the first green and then the second tee. You're like, wait, that's water over there. And that's where it starts. Second hole is a par three. It plays the opposite direction. And then after that, it's just banger after banger after banger. It's a demanding golf course. I mean, you can get whacked around pretty badly if you can't keep the ball in play. You're going to lose a lot of balls, probably. I mean, even as a good player, putzing around, I lost four. Now, three of those were shots I knew were going to be dead, but I'm going to try them. But you're going to lose golf balls in this course. Be prepared to lose some junk balls. But the court, just the setting is incredible. Huge dunes, shaping holes through them, great green complexes, and then you kind of weave your way toward the 11th green, and you reveal to the 12th hole, and there's the ocean in all of its glory. It's a kind of big parkland down and to the right. Beautiful kind of bog type landscaping. It's an incredible picture. Probably my favorite picture of the trip. You play a couple of holes, 12 and 13, right along the water. And then you kind of make your way back. You're still seeing the water for a few more holes, playing alongside of it. And then you kind of come in 17. You know, 17 is just a beautiful contrast of what you just played, because it's this huge kind of saddle valley fairway. Everything is so green. You hit your tee shot down toward the valley. You don't need driver up the tee. You're just trying to keep it in play. Very much an opposite aesthetic to what you just played. It makes it all the more powerful, frankly. The shadows were wonderful that time of day. We were late in the day when we played. That was a mind-blowing golf course. Is it a golf course here's the conversation that we had. What was the golf course you would play every day? And what's the golf course you would like to play like once a year? And they're different answers, right? We'll talk about Rosslare. I would play Rosslare every day for the rest of my life and be very happy. I would play County Louth every day for the rest of my life and be very happy. They're kind of, they're member clubs, right? I mean, that's the way they will. But European club, you got to play there. You got to see it. Got to experience it. It's not meant to be about anything other than the golf, where you walk off and you go, wow, what a day. Parking lot small. Not a lot of food options. I mean, they sold Pringles in the golf, in the little cafeteria. They aren't there to wow you with food. They're there to wow you with golf. And I think that mission was very well accomplished. I will point out that there are also two additional holes in the course. There are two par threes, 7A and 12A, that are just kind of little 120, 150-yard par threes that you can play. You don't have to play them. You can play them. We played 12A. We didn't play 7A. Guy made an ace on 7A, which was kind of cool. He was coming in after we were done. But it's just a tour de force of golf architecture. And I'm so glad that we played it. I'm so glad that I didn't research it beforehand, because all that it reveals just gets crazier and more beautiful and incredible by the whole. And it crescendos around 14 or 15. And then just a really cool, I mean, 17 was powerful to me. Not everyone may feel the same way. And then a great finishing hole in 18. He likes to call it, oh shit. Pat Ruddy, because once you get over the hill, you realize there's a there not it's tricky. It's not big, but it's a tricky hazard that guards the green. Just a fabulous, fabulous golf course. And if you're making any kind of journey where you're in with the area they call Ireland's Ancient East, which is kind of this one of the quadrants of Ireland, Southeast Ireland, basically, go play the course. Please go play that course. Find a way on it. If Pat Ruddy's still alive, go talk to him for 10 minutes. Just, it's a truly unique experience in golf. It's a golf course he's still trying to shape and make better. You don't get that chance every day to talk to someone whose masterpiece is right there and they live at it. Kind of to talk to him about the influences of Ross, obviously, who lived at Pinehurst number 2 when he died, still making alterations, or you know, the importance that Pete Dye played in his career. The architectural parallels were very obvious. It was really cool to be able to do that. So take advantage of that as long as you can. Had a great kind of Irish soul food dinner after, kind of around the area where we came into Wicklow. There's a great little beach right there. That was our first major introduction to how narrow and how difficult it can be to kind of navigate and drive. Patience is of the utmost importance. Having your foot on the brake when you need it is really important if you're driving as an American on Irish roads. They know it. They know to brake. You might not. And if you don't, you're going to have a problem. So just take your time. Be careful. That all said, we then wound up in a basically Irish soul food place. You know, served great plates, just traditional Irish food and other stuff too. Very, very popular. We wound up having bacon and cabbage with some ham as well. Whew! Man, that was good. Some mashed potatoes. Oh, loved every single second of that. I would strongly recommend trying to find traditional Irish food like that, like warm Irish food. Seafood's great. Great catches. Cooked very well, of course. Lots of good fish. Here's some okay prawns, shrimp, but fish is your bet there. Lots of good salads. Lots of good things like that have multiple vegetable combinations you don't expect that taste really good. So just kind of keep your palate open. Keep your mind open to some different things. And you'll have a great culinary time there. It's not like breakfast. I'm not a big fan of Irish breakfast. No offense. Blood sausage doesn't do it for me. Baked beans for breakfast is cool. Tomatoes for breakfast are cool. Not worried about those things, but sometimes you just kind of want breakfast as you know it. Lots of good pastries. Pretty good eggs. The link sausage was a little bit softer than maybe I would expect, but it was still fine. Bacon is just really nice ham. Kind of better than Canadian. Not like Canadian bacon. That Canadian bacon is like the dead last of bacon. Irish bacon is just good ham. Get some jam on it. Put it on a sandwich. You'll love every second of it. So the cuisine was solid. That's halfway through the golf. And then we have three more courses. So we have one more links course. And then we have two parklands and the Irish Open. I don't want this thing to be a two-hour podcast, so we'll stop there. If you have any questions about what we've experienced, maybe you're planning a trip yourself. Maybe you want to learn more. First, I would tell you to go to clubchoiceireland.com. Like I said before, I did not know Tiernan Byrne before this. I'm so glad I know him now. He's just a great guy. He's extremely meticulous, really well organized, thinks things out, gives you great information, has you well prepared for everything that you're doing, and then lets you enjoy it. Not overbearing. He'll be a part of it as much as you need, or he'll let you do a completely self-guided thing. He has plenty of clients in the UK parts of the UK, Scotland and Wales and England, that come. And they just come over and take care of themselves. But for folks like us, Americans who maybe aren't as familiar, he will do everything in his power to not only customize an incredible trip for you, plan it out so that you don't have any of the details to worry about, but also give you a really great Irish experience. Not just a golf experience, but an Irish experience. So we'll talk about the second half of that on next week's show. Cut it off here. And realizing that we talked about this journey for about 40 minutes. There'll be a little bit more to come. We'll be back next week with another show. All right, we'll be back with another show next week. We'll go over part two of this journey. We'll talk a little bit about getting ready for the next journey, which is going to Spain, Germany, and Italy. We're doing the Solheim Cup, doing the Ryder Cup. Talk about Solheim Cup and Ryder Cup. So get ready for that. And, yeah, anything else that comes up over the week, the BMW PGA Championship, Fortinet Championship, we talked about. There's no LPGA this week. Their next event is Solheim. So we've got the Corn Ferry Tour Finals that continue this week. Very strange cadence for that as well, but that's okay. Lots to keep talking about here in the next couple of months. Not only do we have these things, we've got the end of the DP World Tour season. We've got the FedEx Fall. We've got the Aussie Double between the Aussie Open, the Aussie PGA Championship. So lots and lots of golf that'll keep us busy really until December. Thank you so much for supporting our show. I appreciate it. If you catch us as a podcast on a platform and let you do so, please leave a 5-star review. Helps us reach more people. If you have questions for me, get a hold of me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Happy to do that. Answer any questions you might have. Just talk golf, talk life, whatever. And yeah, if you want to follow us on social media, I'm at Ryan Ballingy on X/Twitter/Threads/Instagram, or Golf News Net is on all of those services as well at the handle Golf News Net. Catch you next week with another show. Thanks for your time. Talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.